He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good Hello morning, again, or to our listeners, for this week's version of Car Keys with Jada Markin, Mike Flint, and Robin Leach. I'd like to start talking to our listeners this week about buying used cars. There are several venues from which people looking for used cars can buy them. Private venues, where you see somebody selling a used car that they have parked in their driveway with a for sale sign in it. Used cars on used car lots, which can be a variety of types of dealerships, of independent used car salespeople who go to auctions and buy used cars and then sell them to the public. Used cars that you buy from the manufacturer's dealerships, most of whom will have trade-ins from leased vehicles, and they will have other makes available too, because all the dealers seem to like to make sure that they can sell a variety of vehicles, whether it's from their own manufacturer-sourced vehicles that they may represent, such as Stellantis, Ford, Audi, and the like, to anybody else who's in the used car dealership selling vehicles.
So, if I may barge in, I think
that you may.
The best way I've found to buy a used car, and that does not always work, obviously, is to, amongst your friends and acquaintances, find a car that you really like and that you kind of know, and they're about to get rid of it, and just let them know, hey, when and if and when you sell that car, give me a call. Of course, you have to be ready when they make the call to buy the car. And I've done that once, many years ago, a beautiful Volvo wagon, very well maintained, mint condition, and this person I knew just called me out of the blue one day and said, hey, I'm selling my car. There's somebody ready to buy it. Are you ready to buy it today? And I said, yes, and I bought the car. But things are not always that easy, obviously, and I'm in the process.
That is, and I'll barge back in and say, yes, you don't, and you don't always know. I mean, to try to trust whether you should buy a car from a friend or not has a lot to do with the friend's knowledge about the cars that they have owned and whether or not they, you know, that they maintain them in an appropriate way. Some people, I find, don't really know about their cars that they may be selling, and they also may not be upfront about maybe some of the problems they might have had. So I don't know how reliable buying from friends are unless the friend is very reliable and you know that to be a case. If you see a car parked in the driveway of somebody who's just got a for sale sign in it, that may be maybe not, but maybe the least best way to buy a used car, especially if you don't know anything about the person who owned it, and therefore you don't know anything about the car that's for sale. What is never known about the underpinnings of cars that are older is the condition of the underbody of a car, which includes brake lines, everything metal that can corrode and be prone to rust, depending on where the car has been driven all its life. Cars from the West Coast or the Middle West, where there's not a lot of salt in the air or not a long salty ocean oceans where we put salt in the air, may be the best place in the country to buy used cars. Jay, do you have any thoughts about sourcing cars from another part of the country? They
sure,
of course, moved all over the country in transport trucks every day. And you don't know where some of these cars that may end up on the East Coast have come from, or the or down south or up
well,
north
sure you
or whatever.
Can. I mean, there's a Carfax for every car that's running around. So
I don't know that that's true.
Sure, it's true.
I know Carfax is a very good source of information about many, if not most, of the cars that are for sale through dealers and used car lots that subscribe to Carfax. But I also know that unless the cars have been, the servicing on the cars have been put into the Carfax system, you may not have a Carfax report that's reliable on a car.
Let me just say this. I don't know that every little car shop does the input of the maintenance that they perform on the vehicles into Carfax. But I think most of them do, including many of our local little shops. And what a Carfax will tell you is at least where the car was sold initially, and if you can see a pattern through the mileage, you will see most of the maintenance events, and you will see where those maintenance events have happened, and you'll see the registrations from one owner to the other. And that will be in a Carfax. You can go from there. Some cars that have been serviced in dealerships will have detailed Carfaxes, and others that were not will have less details. But it is a start. And
it is a start.
You can buy a Carfax for, I don't know if it used to be $20, or you can have a membership for unlimited Carfax access if you're into buying cars on a regular basis. And most dealers selling cars will make the Carfax available right off the get-go. And if they don't, it's a reason to be. If you have to pay to get a Carfax from a dealer, then you should walk away from the dealer, period. I mean, that's my opinion.
Well, also, I think you shouldn't buy a Carfax report unless you're really interested in potentially and actually want to think about buying the car that you're looking at. Don't just get a Carfax report when you go look at every car, because that could be expensive, as Jay has just said, unless the dealers are offering free Carfax reports on everything you want to look at, because it costs them money to actually have access to Carfax reports, I believe.
True, and again, I was not prepared for this conversation specifically, but I know you can go and as a buyer, anybody can go and buy a subscription to Carfax where you pay a set amount of money and get unlimited access to Carfax. I honestly don't know if that amount is $50, $100, or I have no idea, but you can do that.
But
you're right. You don't need to see the Carfax of every car you're looking at. But if you're getting serious about it, it is a starting place.
Well, back to the earlier list of sources of used cars that are around, from your driveways as you drive by down the road to dealerships that actually promote most of their used cars based on maybe what they are a franchise dealers selling. We've mentioned on the show before that certified used pre-owned cars, which are usually found on manufacturers' dealers' lots, can be a very good source if you want a car that is probably going to come with a superior warranty coverage on it after you drive it off the lot, as opposed to no warranties on cars that you're going to find in private driveways and other than state-required warranties for cars that are sold through used car dealers in the States, which usually, I think, don't go more than 3 months or 3,000 miles. I'm not sure I got the mileage correct on that, after you drive it off. And most used cars will probably give you 3,000 miles or whatever the mileage coverage is and no problems within that short warranty period, after which who knows what might happen and what it might cost you. If something happens and breaks down later on. Also, with used cars, you can often maybe get the ability to take a used car to a car repair place or something who might charge you a $100 or $150 fee to go over the car and give you a personal opinion report about its relative condition, which might include an underbody inspection, brakes, checking the brakes and the level of the pad, the life of the pads that are left, and that kind of thing, which would give a buyer, a potential buyer, a possibly financial knowledge base on what might be upcoming in terms of repairs needed for areas where cars wear down, from tires to brakes and whatever else might be in those reports. There's just so much to buying a used car that depending on the buyer's ability to, what they can afford to pay for a used car is going to probably dictate how they go about looking for a used car.
Yeah, well, there you hit it, looking. Because myself, I have purchased used vehicles through eBay, friend to friend, and through Facebook. But the thing is, I have always been looking for vehicles that were around $2,000 or less in specific time ranges, because I don't need something brand new for my own purposes, but I wanted something that was paid for. I bought on eBay years and years ago a van, a Ford van, for $500, believe it or not. And I had a paint job put on it, did the lettering myself and all, and I ran it for 6 years.
What van was that?
It was a Ford.
The Econoline?
Yep. And it was, you know, it went through, and I'll be honest, I've always been very terrible about oil changes and all that, never changed the oil in it. 6 years she ran through, and it just was starting to get weak and all, so off I went, and I had a friend who had a Dodge Dakota pickup. It was on the floor, and she says to me, "You want to buy that?" Because I knew her and who had owned it before. And she offered it to me for $500. So I took it for $500. I ran it for 7 years to over 200,000 miles, which means I put 100,000 on it, and I never changed the oil on it the whole time.
My goodness, that's a poor car.
And then the next ones I got were Jeep Grand Cherokees, two of them that were anywhere from a 95 to a 98 that I bought through Facebook. And in both of those cases, I paid $2,000 or less and ran each vehicle for at least 3 years. And again, no
None
service.
Of which got
no
oil
service.
Changes.
Yep, no service. So, see, to me,
use oil.
The oil thing is a myth.
You have to put a new quart or so in every 5,000 miles.
You got to throw a quart in, every now and then. So, generally. But there again, it's always been on the cheap for me, the second car. My wife's car, that's a new one, or, a relatively new one. But for my vehicle, I found that I did very well out on the markets. A lot of it's kind of gut. And, when you go to look at the car, you can look under it. You can look around it and pretty much know what's good, what's not. Listen to the engine. You have people jump into a car they're buying. The first thing they do is turn on the radio. And it's like, No, you need to hear what it's doing. When you drive it a bit, you want to see if it's making external noises or internal noises. And, as it will be. But in the price range, see, I was looking at too, I had to use all that because beggars can't be choosers. So I couldn't have an expectation that someone going to sell me a vehicle for $2,000 or less.
Okay. Let me jump in, Mike, because one of the things that you brought up about not changing oil is another area which gets my craw a little bit is the short oil change intervals that many oil change places put on your window sticker to generate business that is usually not needed within the time frame or the mileage time frame that they give on your window stickers, especially since you've got synthetic oil out there now. And not all old cars can use synthetic oil, by the way. The tolerances of the builds of the engines today are much tighter than they used to be. And synthetic oil is so thin in comparison to pure mineral oil, which has weight logos on it, 5W30, 10W30, 5W40, 0W20, that's synthetic. There's also synthetic 5W30, but there's also non-synthetic oils, which are thicker and probably should be used in these older versions of the vehicles you were buying, Mike, and maybe would allow you to go 100,000 miles without changing oil, but that is not recommended by anybody on this show other than maybe Mike Flynn. but I do not think anybody needs to change the oil on most, certainly the new cars, in any shorter time mileage time frame than 7,500 miles to 10,000 miles if it's a new modern car.
Well, I remember
you may
years
still
ago.
See a sticker on your window if you go to an independent oil change place, and there are many of them out there, or just to use a service center who's not particularly selling any particular brand of cars. They will probably put anywhere from around 5,000 miles or less, maybe even, on your sticker. And there's no need, in my opinion, to change your oil any sooner than the new cars, that is, 7,500 to 10,000 miles, no matter what sticker you see on your window. Jay, you want to add to that?
Sure. A couple things. Years ago, when I moved from Europe to here, the same car manufacturers that were recommending at the time, something like 10,000 miles or equivalent oil changes, the same manufacturers were advertising or mandating 5,000 mile oil changes here in this country. So, and all that is just BS, in my opinion. I think cars can go a lot further than the 3,000 or 5,000 miles. However,
I do.
However, it is good to get the car in the shop once in a while, and while you're doing an oil change, you can see other things that could need attention on the car.
Yeah.
And so, the price of an oil change is not a big deal, whether you do it at 5,000, 6,000 miles or 10,000 miles, or like BMW. BMW will tell you when the car needs an oil change, and I know people who go 20,000 miles without doing an oil change on a BMW. And that's
Because the computer doesn't tell them that they should change it, correct?
Correct. And it's
Cherokees all have computers in them, and they have oil use gauges on them, and you can scroll through and find it. And I don't know how many people know how to do that, but it will say 50%, 70%, 30%, 20%, 10% time for an oil change on it.
So I don't know if in the Jeep it's based on the you know the quality of the oil. In BMW's case, the oil is being analyzed. It's not just the mileage and telling you that you know you're 70% of 10,000 miles, and then 3,000 miles you have to do an oil change. It's analyzing the oil. I don't know.
Well, the Jeeps are analyzing the oil too, because I have a two-trip odometer on it, and I set one for the oil change, and I will look at how many miles I've gone as the oil suggested quality left in it is changing downward.
Well, see,
not like a constant 10,000 miles if the light gets to zero
having
and tells
that,
you to change the oil.
Having said that, the oil level can still go down, and the longer
Correct.
You go without checking the oil, you know, that could be a problem, because if you have oil starvation, you know, the engine is
and listeners, listen to that, because the ability to change, to check your oil by the Yule dipstick method is fast disappearing in model cars starting from 2023 forward. And you no longer can find a dipstick in some of the engines in the European cars, and it's going to be the same way in the Stellantis vehicles, the Ram pickups, et cetera, already, I think, 2025, no longer have a dipstick in them. So you're going to have to find that item on your computer dashboard of array of things to look for and push buttons trying to find out the oil usage. It'll be electronically told to you through a gauge showing on a dashboard.
So the good news is my 2015 Volkswagen, so cars have gotten you know, more sophisticated since 2015, has an oil level sensor that alerts you when the car needs oil. And mine just said, just popped up yesterday, and it tells me that I need to add a quart and a quarter of oil, but that I can still drive safely. And the car has about 5,000 miles since the last oil change. So, okay, I'm going to add a quart of oil, and off I go. I was surprised. My older sports car, German sports car, that is a 2001, has an oil level sensor as well. I can turn the ignition on and keep it on for 60 seconds, and it will give me the oil level. So there, a lot of cars these days do not.
Well, that has not the case with the American cars, so I don't think our listeners care that you have a sports car that is 2001. The going forward
my
in 2020,
a lot of cars have dipsticks, electronic dipsticks.
Well, they do, but many people don't even know how to open their hood to check if they do have dipsticks or not. And so people.
But there's no need to open the hood if you have a dipstick on the dashboard.
See. See, that was the problem.
Dave,
my
you're nice. You're all equipped to know, understand all this stuff. But many people who get their cars don't have a clue what to look for, what to listen for, and they don't read these manuals that are now 300 pages, mostly with disclaimers, making sure that they can't get sued if you haven't read what you're supposed to read in them. So the basics of oil changing have changed more recently than back in 2001 about checking your oil, and I never knew that they were going to ever get away from dipsticks until, you know, the last couple of years or 3 years into what we're talking about.
There's one sure way of getting away from dipsticks, and that is to get an electric car.
Okay, Jay, let's go to electric cars.
There we go.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
The manufacturers are making great strides toward bringing out lower-priced vehicles because they have found that only the wealthier car buyers can buy the ones that have been the earliest production cars available, even with the $7,500 tax credits, which now are getting very complex to understand whether you can buy a car with that has lost its $7,500 EV credit. If you buy a new Tesla for Model 3, for example, you now can return to get a $7,500 federal credit again because of a change of source in the materials going into the car. And I don't know where it's going with the Kias and the Hyundais and the GM electric vehicles, Ford electric vehicles and the like, but they're all, the manufacturers are trying to bring out a sub $40,000 electric vehicle, and that is easily obtainable or more easily obtainable financially for people interested in buying an electric car. Jay?
Yes, well, you mentioned Tesla, and they just dropped what was their lowest priced Model 3, right? And
yes.
Because of the components coming from China. And yes, it's a complex equation. But those tax credits are still there, and they're there on used electric vehicles as well. The tax credit goes down from $7,500 to $4,000, and there are certain conditions, and there are income conditions.
And I don't know how many people who can only afford a $30,000 car at all or that area can use those tax credits because I'm not a tax person, so...
Neither am I.
I don't think it's universally
worth looking into. And
well, it certainly is, but again, you know, it's an education level of education about them too that not all people may be tuned into thinking about when they're going to buy an electric car, unless they listen to somebody like us telling them they ought to be.
Well, maybe we ought to be or not. There are, you know, it's a big world out there, and we've been using gasoline-powered cars and diesel-powered cars and four-stroke engines and sometimes two-stroke engines for decades. But
yep.
Things can change. I mean, we have Porsche is coming out with a six-stroke engine, which I believe is a gasoline engine, which I have not even begun to try to understand. But they seem to think it may be the future. We've seen hydrogen cell vehicles. China is now coming out, and there was an interesting article about this that our friend Jill forwarded to us, the article, about methanol. And methanol could be the next new thing. So there's research going on out there to replace fossil fuels. And not necessarily with electric power. Porsche, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, Porsche is developing synthetic fuels that they are producing in South America. So there are options out there. In the meantime, you know, ICE vehicles are going to be around for a long time.
They are indeed.
I don't think electric vehicles are doomed. I do think there's a place for EVs.
There's always going to be a place for EVs. It's certainly urban areas where people are probably seldom ever going to go long distances on a daily basis are probably the most logical places for electric EVs to make great inroads going forward. Toyota has just postponed their electric vehicle development program, so they're going to stick with hybrids as their main high-mileage type of vehicle available for a couple of more years than they were planning on it because I think they realized that the EV world got very hastily going They found that the education of the people who were really looking for EVs are those people who understand that they are not going to be high mileage drivers on a daily or weekly basis. It is, as you said earlier, the EV market is changing, you know, in their planning stages, and by manufacturer by manufacturer, some accelerating the EV development and some slowing them down. And that'll keep combustion engines around for a lot longer, Jay, as you just said.
I'm not getting electric.
Well, I'm not either. Jay and I have been talking about it for a long time, and he talked Bolt interest for a long time and has yet to get one. And that's the source of a lot of people. But then there are a lot of people who are getting them. I see more and more of these Hyundai and Kia IONIQ 5s and what the Kia Ultra model is. Going down the road, and obviously less expensive than the Porsches and the Cadillacs and the expensive European model electrics.
Quickly before we go, and I wanted to talk a little bit about car design, only because I just saw the announcement of the death of Bruno Sacco, and Bruno Sacco was an Italian-born designer and engineer who was at the head of Mercedes-Benz design from 1975 to, I think, 1999. So all of the cars we saw in the late 70s, early and throughout the 80s and 90s, and the cars that came out in the early 2000s from Mercedes-Benz were penned by this designer, Bruno Sacco. Some were fantastic designs, in my opinion, and some were just, let's put it this way, ugly, in my opinion. But interesting career, interesting trends, and we can talk about his influence on design and car design in general maybe on the next show.
Any safety tips today? Besides, change your oil on a regular basis, right?
No, the safety trip for today, from my standpoint, is with the changing colors of the leaves and the trees, many of whom, which are hanging over our highways and creating shady areas. You just really have to keep a solid eye forward out of your windshield and don't get distracted on your phone or dashboard as you're driving around these country roads, because you can't see people. They don't know that they're walking in green with green shirts on that blend in with leaves or brown pants or whatever. And they are very much invisible in dangerous locations like curves on our winding roads in our listening area.
Yeah,
keep your eyes forward.
And the wet leaves can be extremely slippery, just like ice. So
yes.
My thing is to these people I see blowing their leaves out into the roadway.
Oh, that, yeah.
Shame on you. You should be arrested.
Oh,
wow. Word of the day.
You should get deputized, Mike.
There we go.
All right.
So that'll bring us to the end of another Car Keys. Thank you, gentlemen, and we'll all get together next week again.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you.
Good. Bye.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.